This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Disobeying a direct order from the U.S. Supreme Court may sound unthinkable, but that is just what happened after the school desegregation ruling Brown versus Board of Education back in 1954. You may have heard of black school children being attacked or bullied while trying to integrate classrooms around the nation. Well, after the ruling, many school districts basically told the Supreme Court, no, they just refused to obey. These districts evaded the law for decades, even though some eventually complied a little. More than 100 districts are still under federal court oversight to move their schools out of the Jim Crow era. Why is this such a struggle in parts of America? Let's begin with a district that was, until very recently, under a federal order to desegregate. The Longview Independent School District in East Texas joined a growing list of districts being released from federal oversight in June. It now operates under voluntary desegregation orders. What does voluntary desegregation mean? And how did Longview stay segregated for so long? Joining us are two reporters who have been investigating this for a series in the Texas Tribune that came out today. Alexa Ura reports on demographics. Alexa, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And Aaliyah Swaby is the Tribune's education reporter. Aaliyah, welcome.
Thank you.
And Aaliyah, let me start with you. Tell us a little bit about this district. It's a part of East Texas. Give us a sense of what it's like.
So, Longview ISD is an East Texas school district. It is east of Tyler. It's a school district that has had a long history with a desegregation order, obviously. Until recently, it was mainly white students and black students in the school district. And recently, it's had an influx of Hispanic families enrolling their students in the school district. So there's been some major demographic changes there that they've had to grapple with as they figure out how to close the achievement gap there for their students.
How recently are we talking? The last few years, last few decades?
Yeah, I think it's more in the line of the last couple of decades. You see Hispanic kids are a small portion of the students in the early 90s, and it sort of grows over time very quickly, and to now where they're a little under 40% of the student body.
To your colleague, I wonder if it's okay just to not annoy those listeners who have smart speakers to refer to you as Ms. Ura. Would that be okay?
Yes, that's fine.
Great. Sorry to have to do that to you. But if you wouldn't mind, please briefly to explain to us how Longview came to be under these federal desegregation orders. As I understand it, there were some folks who were extremely unhappy about this and even got violent.
Yeah. Longview, like a lot of places in Texas and really across the country, was resistant to, one, the federal government coming in and telling it what to do, but also sort of mired in the racist sentiment of those times in which they refused to let black and white kids learn in the same classrooms. And so for a long time, it was a segregated district. It refused to integrate after Brown versus Board. And until the federal government came in and started suing districts across the state, Longview was caught up in that and eventually was put under a federal desegregation order that required it not only to let these children learn in the same classrooms, but really sort of take big steps to make sure that they were getting the same quality education. And it was met with resistance. There were white folks in the community who sort of organized to really terrorize black residents, especially those black students who were going to be bused to different schools, going as far as bombing sort of the bus barn where all of these buses were kept that would eventually transport these students into what used to be all white schools.
Aaliyah, I'd love to get your reaction to a clip from someone you spoke to for this story. Troy Simmons is a member of Longview's school board. He is black, and he grew up in the area and kind of watched these integration efforts unfold.
In the long term, it never really moved from a physical standpoint to educate kids. It just bussed kids around so that they would meet the letter of the law, but never the intent of the law. The intent of the law was to educate kids. It never made that attempt. In my opinion, we've only come close to doing that in the last decade of making any progress to doing that. And that's sad to say.
That's Troy Simmons, who is a member of Longview's school board. He voted to have the district released from federal oversight. He says he regrets that now, Aaliyah. What are his concerns exactly?
So I think that the concern for Troy and a couple of other school board members is that, you know, the district only in the last, I think many would tell you, 10 years started making gains in terms of Black and Hispanic students taking more advanced placement classes, being on the same page academically with their peers and not just sitting in the same schools, but actually getting the same education. And I think he worries that without federal supervision, it's just up to them as a school board in order to keep some of those gains that they've made and even make more progress beyond that. There's still a lot of data points that show that they have a long way to go when it comes to getting those kids good at quality educations. Black and Hispanic students are not prepared for college the way that white students are. You know, they're not scoring college ready on SAT and ACT exams. You know, just single number percentages of them are scoring well on those tests. So I think he's concerned that there's not now a court order hanging over their heads forcing them to close the existing gaps between students of color and white students.
We're speaking to Aaliyah Swaby and Alexa Ura of the Texas Tribune. Ms. Ura, we mentioned that there are some significant demographic changes happening in that area, particularly, you know, that are different, make the area different than it was when the desegregation order took effect back in 1970. As of this past June, as we mentioned, Longview is no longer under that federal order. How was the decision made to make that change?
You know, like a lot of school districts over time, they have sort of partnered with the Department of Justice to say, hey, look, we're ready to get out from this order. We've complied with it as much as we can, given how our population has changed since then. Longview, like a lot of school districts, has seen white flight from its school district, where not only did the share of white students drop as Hispanics came into the community, but they were also leaving for neighboring districts for private schools. And so Longview's argument was, we've done this to the extent possible. And it really echoed what other school districts have done so on that front as well. And, you know, in this whole time period, courts aren't as aggressive as they once were when it comes to sort of implementing these orders and demanding that school districts comply with them. In fact, in Longview, it sort of was born out of the court coming to the district and saying, you know, this has been open for 30 years. Let's do something about this. We can't have this case running this long without any action in it. And so, you know, it was sort of a confluence of factors. Both the district had changed enough to where the order didn't quite fit the demographics of it, but it was also part and parcel with sort of the trend we've seen across the country where districts start to be released from federal court orders while the courts and now the DOJ take a less aggressive stance to forcing districts to comply with them.
And how are the integration plans working so far?
You know, I think that the fear in a lot of places is that if you were unable to close the achievement gaps that existed before, how does that play out without the federal government's involvement or without a court sort of holding a district's feet to the fire? And in Texas, the achievement gap that Black and Hispanic students face is much wider than white students. And in other school districts that have been released from those orders, you haven't seen intense progress toward closing those gaps. And so, you know, there's an argument that some of these orders were outdated, like in Longview, where the order didn't even touch Hispanic students and didn't require the district to do anything for them. But I think there's sort of a lot of questions that still remain about how committed districts are, or at least how much work they can be forced into doing and closing those gaps, and whether that's different before or after a court order.
Let me follow on that just a moment before I come back to you, Aaliyah. What about the possibility that the district can close this gap now that it is self-enforcing? I mean, these gaps aren't unique. I think a lot of districts struggle with them. How might Longview fare compared to other districts with the same problem?
You know, I think to its credit, Longview administrators are incredibly aware about these gaps. And I think because of the order, have sort of committed to working toward recruiting Black and Hispanic students into some of the advanced placement classes or more rigorous curriculum that could help sort of, you know, contribute to decreasing that gap. But all of that has been either under court order or, you know, in the case of Hispanics, it's been sort of like, well, we're just going to lump you in here. It hasn't been as intentional as you would think it would be. And so you know, the question remains how committed they stay to that after a court order is gone, particularly given that now the school board is, in reality, in full control of the district's sort of future and commitment. And given the sentiment, and there's sort of a mixed sentiment in the community where you have folks who very overtly talk about the role that race has played in creating these gaps and the role that really that racism has played in contributing to these gaps. And then there's another segment of the community that doesn't really like to acknowledge that. And so given that that's going on, and given that the community is ultimately who votes to be on the school board, there are a lot of concerns about what that means for Longview if the school board becomes dominated by people who, you know, are in one camp and not the other.
Aaliyah, the school's new segregation plan, or the school district's new plan, is designed to be race neutral, and it uses socioeconomic factors instead. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and whether or not that has a precedent in terms of being effective?
Sure, yeah. So the way that the district is ensuring that it continues focusing on integrating its schools is through a grant from the U.S. Department of Education for a voluntary desegregation plan. So this is not like the past court orders in that, you know, it's going to be managed locally. The district leaders will have to report back to the school board to say, you know, here are what our percentages look like at these schools. Here's the data that we've been monitoring on how kids are doing here. And then the school board will be ultimately responsible for making decisions on how to manage that. And I think that, you know, after 2007, it's just become much more difficult for school districts to use race in order to assign students to schools the way that they had to do under the court orders. And so, you know, in order to fix some of the disparities that exist, Longview leaders will have to use other factors, such as socioeconomic status or looking at, you know, the racial makeup in certain areas of their community, and then deciding to recruit from those areas without actually saying, okay, we're going to take, you know, 10 Black students from here and sort of put them in this school. They have to be a lot more indirect about the way that they correct those disparities.
Well, I do wonder, Aaliyah, how that affects the way that they know that they're correcting those disparities. I mean, if the problem initially was identified as a problem with race and not socioeconomics, but socioeconomics become the lens through which one corrects a race-based problem, how do they know that's gonna work, that the solution will carry over?
Right. So there have been recent studies that show that focusing on having a race-neutral plan is less effective for correcting some of those race-specific disparities. So I think that's definitely a concern moving forward as they try and go through a different mechanism for correcting these disparities.
Aaliyah, people in Longview, some of them say that they're afraid the district could backslide without this desegregation order. Give us a sense of what's at stake, how quickly this progress could be undone if that did indeed happen.
I think ultimately it depends on the school board. You know, the school board is going to be the ultimate line of defense against this backsliding. And so it depends on whether or not they're able to have people elected to be on these boards who will continue the progress that they've made. At least one school board member is who's been on the board for decades and, you know, has been committed to desegregation, is considering leaving at the end of the year before his term is up. I think if enough school board members leave and are not replaced by people who are equally as committed to the ultimate goals, they have a chance of, you know, not just backsliding, but also reversing some of the major changes that they've made that have helped students make the progress that they have made so far.
And Ms. Uda, I wanted to end on a positive note, perhaps. Your story opens and closes at a high school football game, that kind of typical Friday Night Lights feel. And, you know, towns come together for high school football. Everyone kind of pulls together to support the home team. I wonder if you get a sense of that same kind of home team spirit in terms of residents in the Longview district, whether they are pulling together to try to make these integrations work.
You know, Longview, like a lot of sort of small cities in Texas, has this sort of homegrown pride, right? Everyone is a Lobo. They wear their forest green attire to these games and they show up, you know, hours before to line up and get their seats. There are folks who have been reserving seats for decades in their stadium and by the high school.
Decades.
And for decades. And you know, the idea that you have sort of Black and white and Hispanic folks sitting together in these reserved seats, you know, for a lot of folks, I think is sort of emblematic of the progress Longview has made. And I think if you talk to folks, that sort of pride that comes with, you know, cheering on a team at a football game sort of extends to Longview as a whole. But, you know, it's still a small town in East Texas, sort of tucked behind the Piney Wood Curtain. And in a lot of ways, it still has a lot of sort of the separation and sentiment that mired it in the 50s when it refused to let Black students learn with white students. Now, you know, we heard from teachers who were telling us that the influx of the Hispanic population, you know, hasn't been welcomed by everyone. You know, it's not sort of a happy-go-lucky place where everyone lives happily together. There is still some tension. And so, you know, for Longview moving forward, that's only going to continue to intensify because, like a lot of places in Texas, its demographics are continuing to change. And so when you think about the efforts they've made in the school,
right,
it sort of really is in the community's hand to determine how committed they stay to this and how and who they elect to that school board.
Alexa Ura of the Texas Tribune and Aaliyah Swaby of the Texas Tribune. Aaliyah, Alexa, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having us.
They've been investigating the changing face of school segregation in Texas, and the first installment of their series is out today. You'll find a link on our website, the1a.org.